This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Special. I am your host, Thor Nystrom. Today, I'm joined by another special guest, Mike Renner of PFF, to discuss this year's front seven prospects. You can find Renner on Twitter at PFFMike. Mike, it's awesome to have you on today. Why don't you get us right into this? Because we have a lot to get through today by talking about your number three interior defensive lineman.
Let's do it. I have Brian Brzee, the Clemson DT, as number three. And truthfully, I don't even think that's a knock. Like, I'm high on these top three defensive tackles. I think all three of the guys bring what could be an impactful all-around skill set to the table. Now, Brzee obviously comes with, like, the injury concern after he tore his ACL and the tape concern that, like, flat out he wasn't at his best this year. I mean, his best tape was probably his freshman year back at Clemson. But as far as physical talent, this guy's, he looks like what the elites in the NFL look like. I just think it's a matter of time before he really figures it out.
Yeah, he's so dang rangy, and he has those quick feet, doesn't he? And we'd seen, like you mentioned, earlier on in his career, he comes into Clemson as the number one overall recruit in the entire nation. Interestingly, one spot ahead of Bryce Young, who is number two in that class. And he was good right off the get for Dabo Swinney. But he had this snake-bitten career the last two seasons. It was one injury after another. And then finally, it's like, oh, he's going to get back on the field. Then he has that weird strep throat thing, like the, you know, last summer into September, that starts eating into the beginning of last season. And then later on, he has the kidney infection. Obviously, there was the very unfortunate thing that happened in his family, you know, with his sister passing away prematurely and stuff like that. Just being off the field, on again, off again, and you would see the flashes, wouldn't you, Mike? Like, in specific games or specific drives, or sometimes it was plays, because, you know, he could disappear, he'd be on and off the field. But on certain games where he was unblockable. The Tennessee game recently, there's been other ones in the past. But that's what you're speaking to is, like, is at the next level, is he going to be a better player than he was in college football? Because he certainly has the tools to do that. Or is this, like, another thing, like, Jerry Tillery, a guy who we were both high on, Mike. I remember you were high on Tillery too. Like, Brian Brzee has a very similar profile to a guy like that. So he's seen some guys bust like that, but he still has that ceiling. So we'll just have to see with him at the next level if the light turns on.
Yeah, I do think, though, like you mentioned, all the things that went on from over the past year, you can almost throw out the bad tape. It's not as simple as that. But it makes it much easier to buy into when you see him, you know, the North Carolina game, the ACC championship, just look unblockable. And I think the movement skills, the fluidity for a guy that size, I just think he's versatile enough to play anywhere from, like, over a tight end on the outside all the way to nose tackle if you really want him to. I do worry a little bit about him being high cut and obviously some of the issues that have really plagued Jerry Tillery over the course of his career, you know, holding up to double teams, you know, dealing with power on the interior. I have those same issues with Brzee, but I just think the skills, it's all really there. It's really only just a matter of time.
So Brzee was my interior defensive lineman too, up until the last basically 48 hours. And I finally made the switch to Kancey, into DT2. Kancey is such an interesting prospect. Why don't you talk about him to the people, your interior defensive lineman too, as well. You've had him there for a while.
I think he's special. Like, I think this guy is, you know, he's not the next Aaron Donald, but the speed with which he plays is even like the fact that he was the best testing defensive tackle and like combine. And then obviously like NFL history with his cone, with his shuttle and with his 40 is not surprising, because on the football field, I've never seen a DT play as quick as him at the collegiate level. Just whether it's getting off the ball at the snap, whether it's being able to just avoid contact, with his agility to make offensive guards miss. I'm in awe watching his tape of how sudden he is at that size, to where, you know, he's an arm length outlier, he's a size outlier, he's a height outlier, all these things. I'm willing to put those aside when you're just as freaky as he is. And he knows how to rush the passer too. It's like, and he's also the most skilled, is I think the other thing in this conversation. Like, Adetemiwa Adebare is a heck of an athlete on the interior, nowhere near as skilled as Kancey. Like, does not quite get it yet about how to rush the pass. Whereas Kancey, you just see it, man. You just see a high level understanding of the position that he plays around his sort of size deficiencies so well.
Yeah, the movement jumps off the screen. Anytime you watch a pick game these past couple of years, it was like, oh my gosh, like you just don't see guys move like that. But Mike, like, as you know, like, we're watching some of these games the past couple of years and it's like, man, that guy looks super tiny. Like, I mean, like, you know, like, and it was like he was licking all these, I'm sorry, but like crappy interior ACC interior offensive linemen. And so you're wondering, like, what, you know, how is he going to test? Is it going to be elite enough to mitigate what we know are going to be the size concerns? It's not just the frame. He has the super short arms, 30 5/8 inches, second shortest at the combine for interior defensive linemen over the past 15 years. And his wingspan is 72 3/4. No defensive tackle over the past decade with sub 74 inch wingspan has even been drafted into the draft. And so you could see that too. And it's like, oh my gosh, this guy tiny, you know, how is it going to go? Whatever. The penetration rate was obviously ridiculous. 22.7% win rate on pass rushing reps last year, 6.4% better than Jalen Carter, 8.2% better than Brzee. But again, you know, how is it going to go? And he tested elite, like you mentioned, the movement, the speed, everything like that we saw on the field. You know, he's sort of like Frogger in terms of the agility. It's side to side. And it's just really, like you mentioned, it's hard for offensive linemen to even get their hands on him. But with how well he tested, like, I was a doubter of his for a while just because of those things that I'm talking about. But between, you know, what we've seen on film in conjunction with how well he tested, I had to make that change where, you know, against him, against Brzee, for instance. And I like how you set that up, Mike. He's not Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald, it's very hard to beat Aaron Donald with power, as you know, and Aaron Donald can stand its ground with the double teams, different stuff like that. That's where the difference is between him and Kancey. Kancey just doesn't have that power. He obviously doesn't have the length, but once a power guy gets his hands on him, if he can, you know, it's like catch me if you can with him. But if, you know, if they can, then he can get dead to rights on the run plays, whatever. He can also be washed out pretty easily by the double teams when they're sent for him or whatever. But like, I think you're looking at more like the continuum. It's more like Ed Oliver. And then the very high one, I saw Lance Zierlein had comped him to John Randall. It's hard to get that one out of your head when you start thinking about it.
Yeah, I do. I will say, if you draft Kancey, you have to have a role in mind from, and also like almost bend the rules of your defense for a guy like that. Because if you want to just say, hey, against the run, we, you know, anchor against double teams, we grab guards, whatever. No, like that's not Kancey. Like, you have to say with Kancey, you see a double team coming, you get around that double team, you know, like you get shoot through that double team, you do something different. Because just at that size, he can't play blocks the way your normal three tech in the NFL would play blocks. But that shouldn't stop him from still being an impact player. Like, he got around doubles consistently. And if he just fired off the ball into like a guard to try to move the line against doubles. He held up well then too in those scenarios. So I do think that's like an aspect of it that just may cause him to actually fall in the draft, because not everyone wants to do that, you know, wants to give that freedom within their scheme. But if you are willing to do that, you're getting a high-end impact player in my eyes.
Last question on Canty for you, Mike. And like going off of what you just said of him potentially not being a fit for all teams dash schemes or be of interest for them just because of some of these limitations, do you think Canty is only the only teams that are going to be attracted to Canty are the 4-3 teams that view him as the three technique? Or do you think in a three-man, a predominant three-man front, that he could also potentially play there? How do you view that?
I'd be surprised to see him playing a three-man front. I mean, if you're a three-man front, I'd want him on the edge. You know, he's as athletic as a lot of edge rushers are. That's where I'd put him, is standing up and let him try to bull rush off at the tackles with that get off and his, you know, low center of gravity. So at that point, though, I just don't see him. Like, you're not coveting him that highly if you're playing him on the edge. So I really only think it's going to be, like you said, teams that define three tech role.
I totally agree with that. And I think I totally agree with your take too, of that's why he gets pushed down the board a little bit potentially. Cause obviously if you have less teams that potentially are interested in your services, I agree with you. It's sitting dead right on the 4-3 technique thing with him. That's how you can filter down the board a little bit. And then Mike, let's talk about the number one consensus defensive tackle in this class, Jalen Carter, number one on both of our lists.
He's right up. He's probably the most. So we've been great in college since 2014 season. So that was 2015 draft. He's probably the most physically gifted defensive tackle prospect I've seen over that span in terms of just twitch, power, frame, strength, you know, you name it. He's just like put together with, you know, very few qualities to him that I would not describe as high end, right? Like physically, like the guy is just, is what it looks like. And the reps he has that are just the dominant reps are unparalleled in this draft class. He will throw a guard to the ground. You know, he'll shoot a gap and just be in the backfield before you know it. Like he has that to his game. Now, is the consistency where you'd like it to be? No. You know, it's a lot of the same knocks you get for a lot of defensive tackles. You know, when you have to carry 300 pounds and you have to give max effort 50 plays a game, are you going to be able to do it? Not. There's very few guys in the history of the NFL that have been able to. So it's not a massive concern in my eyes, but there is, it does, he does still come with that, you know, in the off-field red flags that we've obviously seen bear out over the past month or so. So concerning, but not concerning enough for me to pass on a talent like that.
Yeah, for sure. And a kid that's elite both against the run and obviously rushing the passer as well. Your guys' grades bear that out over the last couple of years. Last year was stupid. I think he was over 90 in both of them. I think he was the number two interior defensive line graded guy in this class, but number one in the Power Five. I think the other kid was from Texas Tech or something like that. But Carter, the thing that like the special sauce thing with him, you mentioned the power. But like where other guys can't absorb it, or most guys, I'll talk about one guy who was able to in college, but almost all the college interior defensive linemen could not handle it. And then at the contact point, when those guys are jarred off their path, Carter with the balance and everything like that, it's like he has like industrial sized shock absorbers. And so he keeps his feet and he's right by you now. He just goes right back on the hunt where you sort of get stunned. Your power doesn't affect him, but his power, you will feel his power unless it's over a line of continuum. Unless you get past the demarcation point. That demarcation point apparently was Osiris Torrance, because he was the one guy with Jalen Carter's power where he was like, But outside of that, I mean, basically every guy that Jalen Carter encountered, he just could not deal with that. But I did think it was interesting that at least Osiris Torrance gave you a little bit of a game plan for how you deal with a guy like that potentially.
Yeah. But I think like Carter, he'll develop more answers at the next level. Cause he really was just like a handsy player, right? He doesn't have like quote unquote moves just yet. Like he knows how to use his hands. And so like the sky's kind of the limit for him once he really develops that full, like compliment to his moves.
Yeah, I think that's a great point too, is like he was as dominant as he was, more or less just doing the one trick pony thing. Like his plan was pretty straightforward. Once he gets, you know, like early on the line of continuum, right? I mean, this kid was a top 20 overall recruit coming out, and he's been able to win with sort of those fastballs so far. Once he starts developing those counter moves, that's when he potentially, I mean, who knows where the ceiling is with this guy, but that's when you start to talk about a guy like Warren Sapp, who, interestingly, Jalen Carter hails from the exact same high school that Warren Sapp went to in Florida. So it's, oh, yeah, yeah, it's interesting, that the symmetry with that, and I don't know what's in the water down there, but whatever it is, maybe we should get our hands on some of it, Mike.
It's the three tech sauce. What it is.
It is. Now, before Mike and I dive into the rest of the front seven class, I wanted to do a PSA about the Fantasy Pros 2023 NFL Draft Guide. It's a fabulous resource, which you can find at fantasypros.com/draft guide. It's got all the goodies that you guys like: scouting reports, mock drafts, big boards, our analyst favorite prop bets, and deep dives into sleepers. And best of all, it's all free. But our premium subscribers also get access to my deep dive scouting reports and into our Discord, where you can interact directly with our analysts. And do yourself a favor and check out the 2023 NFL Draft Guide now at fantasypros.com/draft guide. All right, Mike, moving right along, let's get into the edge class. Why don't you talk to the people about your edge defender three in this class?
I have Lucas Van Ness, the Iowa edge, as edge three in this class. Truthfully, it's pretty close between him and Nolan Smith. I really like the top four in this class, in what we're going to get to, obviously, including Nolan Smith in that top four, in terms of guys who have high-end tools who don't have like a massive path towards those being able to be impactful on the NFL field. But Van Ness, especially, because the combination of flexibility, insane frame. I mean, he looks like Ivan Drago out there with how just put together this dude is. And like, I could see even like a Justin Smith-esque transformation of him, in that coming out 272, if you tell me he's 290 in 2 years, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever, because he's a lean 272. And he's a young guy coming out as a true junior. But the ability to sink into his bull rush is honestly unlike any other player in this draft class, any other player I can remember in recent memory, and that he walked back everybody. Everybody got walked back the quarterback. He had one move. It was that. And it worked when he had a runway. You give him a little bit of a lead up into you as an offensive tackle and you're toast. And even sometimes without it, he didn't necessarily need it, because he is so explosive for a guy that size. So that's just a high floor ability right there when you're on the line of scrimmage. A guy that can create leverage every play, and a guy that's that explosive, you're just going to set an edge. You're going to, again, walk tackles back. And that's a consistent way to make an impact as a defensive end. And that's really all he has now, though. But like I said, like, that's a good starting point to then be able to build off of with more moves, more tools in your toolbox for the future.
Yeah, it sure is. He's like the amateur pitcher that can throw 101 miles per hour. Right. Like, I mean, yeah, you have to stand way back in the batter's box and choke up on that bat, or you're not making contact. And like you said, the other stuff not developed yet. Mike, you mentioned he only had two active. He played three seasons at Iowa. First one was a redshirt season. So he only played the two full seasons. And Mike, as you know, this is the stat that really ticks off Hawkeye fans when you mention it. He had zero starts in college. It's a little bit misleading because he led the defensive line in snaps last year. Stuff like that. So he played heavily off the bench and both off the edge, and you get the versatility because you can also move him inside. The speed to power thing plays there if you want to get another pass rusher onto the field on passing downs, whatever. But then Lucas Van Ness, he goes to the combine, proves the concept of that athleticism that we're talking about, 94 percentile RAS, size adjusted athletic composite. The speed to power thing, it speaks for itself. Mike, the other thing I want to touch on that you said, the thing about him being close to Nolan Smith, he also is on my board, and this is something that we, you know, I think people outside don't, you know, realize as much or whatever. With our jobs, we're not, you know, for a team or a scheme or whatever. Nolan Smith, if we had a 3-4 outside linebacker edge rusher need, Nolan Smith would be above Lucas Van Ness on our boards. If we had a 4-3 defense and the coach comes in and says we need a defensive end, we need a freight train off of the edge there, then it would be Lucas Van Ness. But we sort of have to rank these guys sort of in a vacuum outside of that stuff. I thought I'd touch on that too.
The problem. But I do think all four of these guys at the top, I I feel very good about. Like, I think all four of those guys are, you know, top 10 picks for, like you mentioned, if you do need a 3-4 outside linebacker, I'm more than willing to draft Nolan Smith in the top 10. If you need a true 4-3 defensive end, Tyree Wilson, Lucas Van Ness, I'm more than willing to draft in the top 10. And obviously Will Anderson, if you just need anything, I think I'm willing to draft him in the top 10.
For sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, Van Ness and Nolan Smith are sort of in a bucket on most boards, close to each other. And I think on most boards, you go up to the next tier. Into tier one, there's the two guys. There's been reports, Mike, that some teams see Tyree Wilson perhaps above Will Anderson, which I think would have shocked a lot of people during their careers. How do you see that and sort of compare the strengths and weaknesses of both guys?
Yeah, I'm not willing to go that far. I love Tyree Wilson as a prospect. I think what he brings to the table is unique. You know, the 7-foot plus wingspan, the tackle radius that's just absurd. I mean, his ability to make plays outside of his immediate frame of reference is unlike any of the other guys in this class. I mean, he'll cover just like 5 yards with a dive and get to a running back. And it's really a unique skill to have for an edge setter. But he really just doesn't know like what he's doing. And it's obviously improved, like back from his time at Texas A&M. He like legitimately didn't know what he was doing. I think Austin Gale said he looked like he was in high school still with the way he was playing. And it was true. So you've like seen the progression, but even still, fifth year being that sort of just raw still, it's like, that's why I trend towards Will Anderson. But just as pure athletes, you're splitting hairs in terms of what you want, because Will Anderson just like knows how to play football. He's known how to play football since, you know, he stepped foot at Alabama. I still think Tyree Wilson, there's some learning curve there. You could have some mental mistakes there because of how, just like I said, behind he is. But man, it, just a different type of skill set than you see every class for sure.
Yeah, I think you set that up well. Like Tyree Wilson, he's the built in a lab guy, and we were always waiting for Tyree Wilson to break out because he clearly so gifted. The levers on that guy, ridiculously long. His wingspan, I got it here, was it 82 plus, 83, something like that. I got to find the number.
I think it
was 85. 85, yeah. Jesus. Oh, yeah.
Over 7 feet.
I was looking at Will Anderson's the wingspan on Tyree Wilson, absolutely ridiculous. He has a little bit smaller hand size, but the length of him is ridiculous. And that obviously poses the problem to the offensive tackles when he's coming off the edge there. You also have some versatility with him, you know, like we've talked about with a couple other guys. With Tyree Wilson, I don't think he's necessarily boxed into any scheme. Could potentially be a 3-4 outside linebacker, certainly could be a 4-3 defensive end. But I like how you set that up of like, the breakout did occur last year. We absolutely got the breakout. He didn't get injured until November, so we got a, sort of a bulk of a season from him. He averaged just as many pressures per game while he was playing as Will Anderson did. But like you mentioned, it was mostly on the athletic gifts and the length and stuff like that, and being a problem with that, with the hand usage and using the length, everything like that. He still doesn't have that fully fleshed out plan. And you can see he still processes the field pretty slow. So with him, I totally agree with you. It's you have the versatility and the stuff that you can teach, but you also have to project a little bit more as far as going forward, because there's a lot of things he could still work on. And that's where it becomes, are you glass half full on Tyree Wilson, or are you glass half empty? Because the glass half full people on Tyree Wilson, they'd say, yeah, if he just figures out how to diagnose a little bit quicker, if he learns some of these different counter moves, if he learns how to use the length even better to facilitate some of those counter moves by keeping the distance and stuff like that, then he's absolutely going to take off and just be a monster. But you have to do a little bit of a leap of faith on that one. The guy that you don't have to do the leap of faith on, Mike, is our edge number one, a guy who's been winning in the same sort of way going back years now. Talk to us about Will Anderson.
Yeah, I'm not surprised the overthinking has gone on from Will Anderson this year, but it is just that, in my opinion. It's overthinking to just go anywhere else at the top of this edge class. Not saying he'll 100% be the best in 3 years, but I know he'll be damn good. You know, it's that body type. It's the explosiveness at 6'4", 250, with some flexibility. I don't think he has a leap bend or anything, but more than enough. And then balance and power at that size that, you know, he just moves like high-end tight ends move on a football field. He separates off a block and gets to his feet and then can close to a ball carrier. And now he has some issues with diving and getting to the ground to try to finish plays instead of wrapping up, and has some missed tackles on his tape because of that. But I still do love his balance, whether it's, you know, him rushing the pass or him having to deal with contact on the inside. You just never really see him get, you know, really jarred by that and off his game. So there's still like a lot of meat on the bone too with him. Like he's not, you know, the all world with his hands prospect that the Boses were coming out. He's not terribly refined. He was, even at Alabama, used out of position, I feel like, a good amount on his tape, to where if you're just playing him as a pure wide edge guy and letting him attack in that role, he can make much bigger impact on an NFL field. So yeah, Will Anderson's just, he's just good, man. He's just very, very good.
Yeah, I feel like he's sort of like the Aiden Hutchinson of this class, right? Like where it was like he's been in the spotlight for so long, then you just get the opportunity to just start nitpicking stuff on him. Because the rest of this, I mean, 2 years ago, the guy has 34 and a half tackles for loss in one season at the highest level of college football, 17 and a half sacks that year, led the FBS. And it's like last year, his detractors are like, oh, he regressed last year. He was down. Yeah, he still had 10 sacks and 17 TFL, and he still had that top five pressure rate. You know, like, I mean, like I said, Tyree Wilson got up to the point where he tied him, but like, that's still an enormous pressure rate that now we're complimenting Tyree Wilson for. So you sort of can't have it both ways. But yeah, he's been doing it long enough, Mike, where we've seen the concept proven with him.
Yeah, I just don't have worries. I just, when that's the case, you know, you can chase higher end traits, sure, by all means. But the Aiden Hutchinson thing, I think, was a great cop. It was like last year, you knew Aiden Hutchinson was going to be good. Trayvon Walker, maybe he'll be good. That's how I feel about Will Anderson versus anyone else in this edge class. It's like Will Anderson is good, will be good next year, will be good year two, will be good year three, year four, could get even, you know, could improve to the top of the edge position. He's like that physically gifted that I don't think he's capped. So yeah, we're on the same page with that.
So Renner and I, our list so far, our top three lists, have been uniform. That is about to change with the linebacker group, where we have much different top fours. Renner, why don't you talk to us about your linebacker three, and then I'll follow you up by telling you where I got that guy.
All right. I have Drew Sanders, Arkansas linebacker, as linebacker three. He's still really a projection. I still don't think he quite. So he's obviously started Alabama first two seasons on ball. Edge guy. Didn't really play much, though. Transfers to Arkansas, they move him off ball, but still will put him on the line at times. We'll still blitz him a lot. I think he rushed the passer still over like 100 snaps and had double-digit sacks. Like, he's still – I could still see teams being like, hey, let's move you back onto the ball and let you rush the passer, because there's length, explosiveness, speed. It's there. He just is still undersized if you're a pure edge. But as an off-ball, if you're talking about a guy you want as a blitz-heavy scheme, boom, the guy in your class. That's who you want as a blitzer. He will get the job done against running backs very consistently and has the kind of wingspan to shut down throwing lanes. You just see in space breaking down as a tackler, still issues. I still think reading runs between the tackles, it's just not – you're never going to be with 1 year of linebacker play up to what you want it to look like in the NFL. But he's my favorite, like, pure traits projection in this linebacker class, that in time I see him figuring it out in a certain role and being a productive NFL linebacker.
Yeah, he's an interesting case, right? Like you mentioned, you know, he's a five-star, he goes to Alabama, but then he's stuck behind, including Will Anderson, the guy that we just talked about, but, you know, just a bunch of studs there that Alabama had. Then he transfers to Sam Pittman's Arkansas team last year. And then, you know, he gets to play some off-ball linebacker. He did do some edge stuff, move him around a little bit, and he took off. You know, he blew up last year. He's named to the All-American team, and then he declares into the draft, where he becomes a really interesting proposition, because we only saw it for that 1 year. But he proved more things than I thought he would. Right. Like, I mean, he was better in, like, earlier in his career, he couldn't play in coverage. Like, you had to hide him there. You just wanted him to pass rush all the time. He showed some chops with that. Right. I mean, he's still coming along, of course, but he has all the athletic tools for it and stuff like that. and he wasn't like Mr. Magoo out there. We've seen some athletic linebackers of recent years that are like Mr. Magoo in coverage. They just don't know what they're doing, whatever. He at least was competent last year, but you still have some of those picadillos of his game. Like, is he like this tweener who's caught between off-ball and edge, maybe? Or is he, does he have the traits to be really good at both them? And he could, you know, like, I don't want to say poor man's Micah Parsons and Phantom by, damn him by fame, praise or whatever. But, you know, Anthony Barr is another one that comes up ubiquitous comp with him. The one thing I was concerned about last year, he did, you know, great across the board. You mentioned 11 sacks, 25 hurries. He did have close to a 20% missed tackle rate with 22 missed tackles. There's some of those things of his game that he just has to refine. But like you said, very high ceiling. He's my linebacker too. And Mike, let's go to your linebacker too now. Who do you got there?
I have Jack Campbell, the Iowa linebacker, as linebacker too. I think he's the safest linebacker in this class. You've seen him do, you know, things a Mike linebacker will have to do at the next level. Play between the tackles, zone drops, take on blocks, tackle in space. Like, he's a good, not great athlete. You know, his range is okay, just fine. Just adequate by NFL standards, but when he gets to a play, he makes it. You know, there's very few opportunities that he leaves on the table. And I just think the size aspect, something different he adds that not a lot of guys in this class do, and that still matters by NFL standards, still very much comes into play when you see who's seeing the football field for these NFL teams more often than not. It's the 240 plus pounders. So He's just a very safe guy in a class with not a lot of safe guys is how I'd kind of describe him. So it reminds me a lot of like a Logan Wilson coming out where it's just like, he'll be good. Is he going to be a Hall of Famer, Pro Bowler? Maybe not, but he'll be good.
So Jack Campbell for me is my top linebacker in the class. You know, on the field, for sure, he's been the best of these guys the past couple of years. You mentioned in coverage, one of the interesting things was we didn't know how fast he was, but for the same reason we don't know how fast most of the Iowa defenders are, because the Ferentz, they play, and Phil Parker, they play so much of the zone concept. So you didn't get to see him on a runway or whatever, but in the zone scheme that they did, he was extremely clever. You talk about a guy that gets in the passing lane and then has those long arms batting away the balls. He 15 career pass breakups. So he's very good in that phase. And then against the run, it speaks for itself. Sideline to sideline, diagnosis really quick. And then when he gets on the doorstep, he has that enormous tackle radius. One thing he had to prove was the concept of his athleticism at the combine. We already knew he had the frame, and he absolutely did that. 6.743 cone, 4.24 short shuttle, both number one amongst linebackers, 9.98 RAS. So I have to go with Campbell as my linebacker one. Mike, we've reached your linebacker one. Why don't you tell the people who it is?
I have Dyan Henley, Washington State linebacker, as my LB1. I just really buy into the coverage traits that he has. And just, I think a big part of playing coverage, especially linebacker in the NFL, is how you see the game. You know, it is still a position where you can make up for athleticism by playing faster and by seeing stuff before it kind of like really unfolds. And I was in awe of how he did that in coverage and how good he was in that regard. And it shouldn't be like, he's a former wide receiver, has only been playing linebacker for 3 years, former quarterback too in high school. Like, he obviously understands football. And then what really kind of sold me on him is he's a great tackler. I mean, he usually with the guys we're saying, like a Drew Sanders, who's just starting to play linebacker, you're like, they maybe don't have that aspect wholesale, how to play in space, how to track down ball carriers. With Henley, that was never an issue for me on his tape. So the only real issue is he's 225, right? He is not going to be your every down take on. He's got to play around blocks, that sort of thing. But I really do think he is the best coverage backer in this draft class.
Yeah, Dyan Henley, he's really grown on me. I do always think of Bye Bye Miss American Pie when I hear his name, especially he played in the Apple Cup there at Wazoo or whatever. But you mentioned like that as far as the position convert guy goes from Nevada to Wazoo, his last year in Nevada was when they started playing him off ball full time. He did really well with that. That's what attracted the interest of the Power Five. And then he was awesome last year at Wazoo, like awesome, like in all phases or whatever. And I love the point that you brought up about his tackling reliability. Because as a Minnesota Vikings fan, you start to get tremors about an undersized linebacker that switched to the other side of the ball with the tackling stuff Chaz Surratt I'm talking about in the last year or 2 years ago in the third round and coming out of UNC, Surratt had that super duper elevated missed tackle rate. And he never really figured that out at the NFL level, obviously, but Henley showing proof of concept of that. I rank him 4 though, but I have him really close with the guy that I have linebacker 3. And that is still an open race for me. I got to get back into their tape even more to sort of decide on that. But I got Trenton Simpson there right now. And it's all, Mike, as you know, it's a dice roll on the traits with him. He's just the traitsy guy. But in flashes, we've seen him in every single phase doing stuff, right? Like on his best reps as a pass rusher, he's super duper dangerous there. On his best reps in coverage, he's really, really active there and versatile, right? Like, I mean, you know, both as an off-ball guy, you could put him in the slot. Clemson was doing some fun stuff like that and different stuff like that. And then against the run, he's sideline to sideline. It's just he doesn't see the field well. Like, it hasn't coalesced with Trenton Simpson yet. He's obviously the stud athlete, has very good length and everything like that. And again, on his flash reps, he looks awesome. It's just too raw right now. I'm waiting for the light to turn on. Henley, you know, you talk about catching up to that guy really quick with his work in one season. But I still have Trenton Simpson there at number 3 just because of the physical tools. Where did you have Trenton Simpson, Mike? And quickly, what were your thoughts on him?
I think I have him as linebacker 4 in this class. Actually 5. I have Nick Herbig ahead of him, but I think his best role truthfully could just be slot. Like he played as a sophomore. I think he's obviously like he runs a 4.43. Like he's one heck of an athlete from a testing perspective. Like none of his numbers would look out of place if you called him an outside cornerback, right? Except for his weight, you know, being 235. So I think just let him play in space as a slot where it really is simplified in what you have to look at in terms of your run reads, right? In terms of how you're filling, you don't have to worry about pulling guards, all that stuff. You're more just focused on what your role is in coverage. And then you're a secondary support player kind of in the run. I think that could be an ideal role. Kind of like how we've seen, you know, Isaiah Simmons flourish in such a role for him. That to me is just comes with a little more risk though, again, where it's like, I don't have a great fit for him with what he put on tape just yet, but the tools are pretty ridiculous with Simpson.
Well, Mike, this was a ton of fun. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have today. Appreciate you coming on. For Mike Renner, I am Thor Nystrom. Thank you for being with us and tune in next week as I'm joined by another special guest for a deep dive into the defensive back prospects in this year's NFL draft.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Fantasy Pros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying 4th season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering 2 shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.